Welcome back to Chess Journeys, episode 144. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to glorify ratings games like our guest this week, but we also dive into the plateaus and even the pits of despair below that. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen level supporters, Blundergoat, Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Downrich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and king level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, you fill out the Google form in the show notes. You can send me a DM on Twitter. People send me messages on Lee Chess, at chess.com, anywhere you can do it. If you're interested in getting better at chess, which I think you are, you can enroll in one of Noel Studer's two programs on his next level training program options. There's a code in the show notes. You can use that. You can help yourself. You can help me. But now it is time to get on to the matter at hand. We have Adam. He is a dedicated adult improver. He has a busy career, and he's done the impossible. He gained 170 points in 9 months while playing underrated middle schoolers at our club. How did he do it? We're hoping to find out today. So, Adam, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Hey, Kevin. Yeah, a little bit. Though I hadn't played all weekend, so it's been a little like topsy-turvy.
Okay. Did you not play this weekend because you were so obsessed with the candidates you didn't have time to play?
No, I had an expo for my new company. So was traveling back and forth and doing that. But I was definitely watching the candidates. Okay. We had it on in the car driving back, and it was madness.
Yeah. Who are you rooting for?
Oh, definitely rooting for our Americans. Okay. That was a heartbreaker.
Okay. So were you rooting more for Fabi or more for Hikaru?
I would have been happy with either of them winning. But I mean, I'm super happy about Gukesh. I think the young Indians are great players and good for the game there. But I would have loved an American.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting to have Gukesh win. But I kind of feel like Fabi, it's his turn, right? Like, he's been the best player in the world. He had to play Magnus. Like, I don't know. I felt like it was his turn.
I think, to me, there's no deserves or turn. It's you got to go take it. Yeah. And a couple of years ago, there was a good Magnus quote when he was doing some commentary, and he said that somebody made a wussy move, and he said, if you want to be world champion, you got to be a shark. I'm paraphrasing because there were words that were probably not family appropriate used.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Two reasons I wanted Fabi to win. I think Fabi deserves it. And then number two, one of our guests on the show and my daughter's coach, Craig, has actually beaten Fabi, and I have played Craig. And so it's like, by proxy, I've almost beaten Fabi. Like, I'd take that. I mean, just to be clear, Craig was like almost an adult, and Fabi was like 7. But it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, you can count that.
If I beat Magnus when he was 4, I would count that. That would be amazing. All right, Adam. Well, you said you played a little chess today. What kind of chess is your, like, just messing around chess? Do you play Blitz? Do you play rapid games? What do you do?
Yeah, usually it's Blitz. I mean, if I'm just sitting around, I'll play Bullet.
For improvement, right?
No. Oh, man. If anything, Bullet is worse for my game.
Okay. Does it get you in bad habits of like...
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Yeah. If I've got tournaments coming up, there's no Bullet being played.
Yeah, I tend to... let me phrase that. I have not played a Bullet game since coming back because I'm too worried that I'll be like, whoa, that was fun. And then suddenly I'll be like, chess improvement? I don't even know what that is. I just play Bullet.
Oh, yeah. So it's Blitz and Rapid. I stick to mostly 10 minute I'm really working on stuff.
Okay. And when you play your 10 minute games, do you spend some time going over the game? Are you just looking at the openings and how those went? How do you play your 10 minute games?
Every game I go through. Mostly just look at the opening and any blunders or mistakes that were made, and then try to figure out, you know, what was going on in that moment and why did I not get it right? Or why did some opening line go wrong? And you know, what do I need to do next time in that position? Or if it's just some opening I'm never going to see again because it's some ridiculous blitz stuff, I move on from that pretty quick.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I hadn't been playing E4, and in Blitz, I've been playing a little E4, just kind of mix things up. And I saw the first Stafford Gambit I've seen in like a year and a half. And it took me a second. I was like, what is this? And I was like, oh, right. This is the Stafford Gambit. And Adam, I ended up having a mate in two that I missed with 20 seconds left. And it ended up being a draw. And I was like, no, I rewarded this person for playing the Stafford Gambit. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally you lose to a guy who starts a game with H4, and what can you do? So
yes, that's true. That does happen. Okay. let's flash backwards a bit, because from what I do know about you, you did play as a kid. When did you pick up chess?
I would say it was around the time of that movie, Searching for Bobby Fischer, is probably how I discovered it. Okay, and so you discovered started learning. Movie. Yeah, probably. That was like 92, 93. So I would have been like 6 or 7. And me and some friends started playing at school. And the school brought in a program. We were all in this after school star program here in LAUSD. And they brought in a chess teacher because they saw that they had some potential kids for the program. And that's how I kind of met the first coach that I had.
That's cool. And that was Garry Kasparov.
No, I mean, I could say who it was. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. It was a guy named Mark Rosenberg. He was kind of known locally because he got the chess park built over at Santa Monica Pier.
Okay.
Which unfortunately they tore down a couple of years ago during COVID.
Yeah.
That was sad for me.
I thought I knew that name. I think that's where I know it from. Okay. Yeah, that is sad. When I moved to LA, one of the first things I did was go to the chess park. I wasn't a tournament chess player or anything, but I was like, this is cool. And so it was a sad day when I read in the somewhere that they had tore it down.
Oh yeah, I used to get bike there and play games, and with, you know, I think Kachin would make appearances once in a while, and you'd get some of the better players would show up from time to time and play games.
Nice. Sounds fun. Okay. So what age was that, do you think?
So that was probably in my teens. Like, okay. By then that I would probably, you know, had the freedom to go bike to Santa Monica without my parents really so caring where I was.
You didn't bike to Santa Monica when you were six?
No.
Okay, that's too bad. That'd have been cool. You're like on your training wheels. I got this, guys. Okay, so what, you picked up chess then as a teenager?
No, so I played as like 5 to 7 is really when I started, and did scholastic tournaments for a few years. Went through a couple of different coaches and stuff during that time, and I was hooked once I won my first tournament.
Oh, you won a tournament?
I won a scholastic tournament, and that was fun because I didn't have some of the coaching some of the other kids did.
Yeah.
That was awesome. After that, I was like, I want to do this all the time.
Yeah. And how big was your trophy? Because those trophies are big at scholastic tournaments.
They've probably gotten bigger. That one was, I don't know, 14 inches. It's upstairs in my garage.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. My daughter's friend got 15th this weekend, and the trophy was like 5 times bigger than the first place one I won for winning our club championship under 1800. And I was like, that's the 15th place one. All right. That's pretty impressive for 15th place. Huh? That's pretty good. It's pretty good. Okay.
Yeah. I think my biggest trophy is actually a second place trophy, which is funny.
Okay. That is funny. All right. So you're playing 5 to 7, playing scholastic tournaments. Did you play through for a long time, or was it like a short stretch?
So then I was still playing at home and getting coaching, but there was definitely a gap of a couple of years for tournaments. And when I went back, it was time to start playing with adults, and you know, probably played again around 12 or 13. And that was going pretty good. And then there was another gap of a couple of years. And then once I got my driver's license, I could actually go, or driving permit, I could actually go to my, take myself to tournaments.
Nice. Okay. So what accounted for the gaps then? Like, if you're playing at home and having coaching, why not go to events?
Well, we lived in a part of LA that just was pretty far from stuff. And my folks just, you know, they were both working. It wasn't always possible to get to to tournaments.
Right. So it wasn't a thing where you were like purposely taking a break. It was just life circumstances. You're a kid. You don't get to control your own destiny entirely. And
we were just far from everything.
Yeah.
The South Bay of LA is not a chess mecca.
Yeah. No. Now it is. Or one night a week.
Yeah. I mean, I discovered the club around that time. Yeah. Actually, my first, I think it was my first game ever at the club was with Richard. On the same day he got hired at my father's company.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay. Wow, it's all coming together now. So he had to throw the game, right? Is that what you're saying?
No. I think we have one draw and one game where I lost back then. I'd have to look back at the records. I do not believe I have a tournament win against him. We haven't played since I came back.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I don't think I've beaten Richard either. He's also been improving, at least rating wise. So that's pretty impressive stuff. Okay. So, did you play at all in high school then? You got your learner's permit? Did you drive all over LA and enter tournaments?
Oh yeah. I was playing as much as I could once I was driving myself. And yeah, rating went from, I don't know, 1200 up to 1850 at that time. And then college kind of got in the way of continuing with chess for a while. So that's why. So then I came back. I think I played a tournament my first summer after being away from chess for a year, and that did not go well. And then I think I played one or two more events and those didn't go well either. And I think I lost 150 or odd, I don't know, 120 odd rating points in three events and decided that I would put chess on hold until I had time to, you know, do myself some justice.
Yeah, that's hard. It's hard when you go on the big rating slide and you're not working hard and you're like, well, then what's the point of this? Like, I thought the point was so I could get better at chess and see the number go up.
Yeah, and I don't really care about my rating too much, but it is not fun if you're just totally unprepared.
Yep. So it looks like you came back like 6 years later, but just for a year. What happened there?
I came back, I played two games, and it still wasn't going well. And then COVID happened for, you know, I decided I was going to study and get serious. More serious about it the way I had before. For me, it was, I think when I first got my driver permit, I played the LA Open and I had a terrible tournament and I was losing. I think my rating was only like 12 or 1300 at the time, but I was losing to 1500s. And I just, from a personal arrogance point of view, didn't think I should be losing to those guys. And
Okay. Yep. I know how that goes.
So I went home and spent a lot of time studying and on playing chess online. And from there, that's when I made my first big rating jumps. And then I found the club, and the club was great.
Yeah.
In Gardena.
Let's take a step back then to when you were making those rating jumps. You said you started studying it a lot. Do you remember what you were studying back then? It looks like it's like 2003. Can I guess, like, Reassess Your Chess? What's another good 2003 book? How about Secrets of Modern Chess Strategy? Were those on your list?
Fire on Board was a favorite of mine. I have like Salty's Pawn Structure Chess. Bobby Fischer Teaches Chess. I got a hold of a copy of My 60. Capablanca's Best Chess Endings. I was going through a ton of books back then. Okay. But I also was playing a lot online. I was from that first gen of online around 2000. And I was on ICC and chess.net and just playing like tons and tons of Blitz and Rapid there. And I also got a hold of Chessbase at that time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Early adopter of Chessbase and Fritz.
That's interesting. When I think of Chessbase, I think of like chess professionals, but here you are as like a 1300 being like, I'm on Chessbase, baby.
I saved up my allowance money and bought it.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're going pretty hard into books. I imagine in 2003, not a lot of YouTube.
No, there was actually the other computer program I had back then was Maurice Ashley Teaches Chess. That was maybe earlier on, maybe late 90s. Okay. That was a fantastic program. I can't believe he never updated it and kept that going.
Okay. So in these early 2000s, you're mostly reading books. This is right about when I was playing. I was playing in like 2000, 2002. It looks like maybe during your scholastic years. And I too, it was like exclusively books because that seemed to be what I could find, at least. Like you could buy like these CD-ROM, or were they CD-ROMs? DVDs of people? I never bought any of those.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was once I kind of discovered, got a hold of Chessbase and started being able to do openings, that was a huge jump for me in my game. Okay.
So you did like your own opening work through Chessbase?
Yeah. And at that time, Fritz was not, it was, I don't know, it was the same version that beat Kramnik in that, the last man versus machine they ever did.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really that strong. It couldn't see sacrifices. You'd have to click through and just play through moves, and then it would recalculate.
Yeah. But I think they should bring back man versus machine, but the machine plays down a knight. Like, it just goes full Paul Morphy. Like, I only play down a knight against you bad humans, and let's see if you can do it.
Oh, I think it would still crush everybody on Earth.
I think so do, but it would be more.
I think even rook odds, the computers would win.
Oh, man. Okay, well, it looks like, so you stopped playing, and it looks like you came back in 2011 and the beginning of 2012, just for like 3 months. Do you remember what happened there? Like, how come you jumped back?
Yeah, that was probably when I came back, tried to play a couple of games, realized it just, I need to have real time to dedicate to it.
Okay. And you dipped out for 9 years, and what brought you back?
Well, I had found Lee Chess before COVID and started getting more into it again.
Okay.
And wanted to play a tournament, and then COVID kind of hit, and I had to put those plans on hold, which was probably for my benefit.
Okay, so it wasn't like the Queen's Gambit that drew you in, of just kind of like you rediscovered how awesome chess is?
No, I mean, I love the series, but it didn't. It really didn't play a part. I always had it in the back of my head that I wanted to get back into chess. I just needed other things in my life to line up for that. Career was busy. You know, things slowed down a lot, which is nice for me. So,
okay. So during COVID, did you use that as like a big opportunity to take time to study and really go deep with chess, or what did you do with that?
Yeah, I discovered all the guys on YouTube then, doing content and got back on, you know, chess.com. And I mean, I also have the Play Chess one, but there's really nobody playing on there. I don't even know why I have. Yeah, it's the server through the guys who make Chessbase, the company that makes Chessbase.
Oh, okay. That's funny. I can't believe I don't even know of this whole place you can play chess. Well, no, I do. Okay. So you're playing on these servers. What were your initial YouTube channels that you were drawn to?
I mean, the same ones everybody's watching. It's okay. You know, Gotham Hikaru, Agenmatter does some okay. I think his analysis is okay.
Okay, so you're back, you're watching stuff. Did you start studying and like pull out some books again, or are you now this time around at this part of your life mostly like a YouTube guy playing?
I am not really using the books much. Yeah, I play and study what I want to, and I just grind problems.
Oh, okay. When you say problems, do you mean like chess.com puzzles, or do you mean like...
Yeah, mostly just as many puzzles and and problems at different areas that I can get through. Okay. It's just for me about pattern recognition and seeing as many positions as I can kind of come to recognize and be able to break down.
So it sounds like kind of focusing on the basics, puzzles, playing, analyzing games.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, can't argue with that.
Yeah. I don't have like a complicated study plan. Other than that, I do a little bit of end game stuff, but not a lot. I figure I'll probably have to, if my rating goes up much higher, I'll have to increase my end game study.
Okay.
But my games I'm still finding from a kind of percentages aren't going that deep.
Okay. Are you still finding that even, in the mid to high 1800s, it's still tactics? Someone misses a tactic in a game and that's what wins it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you play sharper openings or quieter openings?
I want my opening sharp. That's
okay.
My favorite. I want it as complicated as possible.
Sharp openings to use all the pattern recognition you've been working on.
Yes. And
that makes sense.
It doesn't always work in my favor, but if I can, put an opponent in a complicated situation that they don't know that well, and if they wade through a minefield and win, good for them.
Okay. So does that mean you're willing to make, say, like a move that isn't perfect or isn't the best move, and you can see that, but you see it poses your opponent so many tactical issues that it looks impossible for them to find the way through? Or is it more like, I'm steering this complicated, it's unclear to me, but it looks interesting and tactical?
No, it's more the first one. I will go into things that the computer isn't even the computer's not particularly happy with me about.
Okay.
If I feel that the advantage for the opponent is particularly hard to find, I'm okay with playing bad openings or semi-questionable positions.
So does this go like into your opening prep, where you specifically prep openings where you're like, computer doesn't love this, but that's okay. I'm playing humans and they're only, 1800.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought process is, of course, the computer can find that, move three, I gave up all advantage white had and it's just equal. But is a human going to just go straight to equality and even understand what's equal? Not necessarily.
Yeah. Maybe if it's Magnus, but not if it's me. Yeah.
And yeah, equality from a human standpoint, such a hard thing to put your finger on, unless it's opposite color bishops and three pawns on the board.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. One of the things when I think about you, it's not doing lots and lots of tactics puzzles. It's like doing opening prep for each opponent each week at our club. Am I right on that, or am I wrong on that?
It depends. If I have information, or if it's someone who I've seen what they play, and I kind of know, I feel like if I have the information, I should use it.
Sure.
If I don't know anything about that opponent, not really, I have plenty of stuff I know really well, and I'll play that or see where we end up.
Okay. Gotcha. How much of your study time would you say you spend on openings?
If I'm studying, most of it, probably over 50% of that time is spent on openings when I want to be studying. Otherwise, I'm just playing games and doing problems. It's not that fixed.
Okay.
In terms of that.
So you don't consider like doing puzzles as studying. That's just kind of like a daily routine or something.
Yeah, that's Yeah, it's just exercises. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Do you do much deeper calculation work, or do you feel like I'm not yet at a level where that's the problem, and it's more just like the first two moves, the patterns, the just puzzles?
I think you get there with those, with the harder puzzles and stuff, but no, I'm not like trying to find something that says it's a deep calculation exercise where you find how to win a pawn on move like seven moves deep or something, or the only way to maintain your advantage kind of stuff.
Fair enough. How much time would you say you spend each day or week on chess?
I think it fluctuates. For me, I don't mind taking breaks and getting away from it a little bit. I have a rule for me that it's, I only do what I'm enjoying and having fun with. I don't try to stress about chess or my rating. If I'm getting frustrated or something, I take a break.
Okay. That sounds remarkably healthy.
That's how I see chess. Chess to me is really part of my overall like life, healthy life kind of perspective. And I don't really need to ruin it by putting a bunch of pressure on myself. I feel pretty good about what I've done, and I do it for me. So
do you feel like gaining so much time, so much rating in such a short amount of time is like just getting back to where you were? Do you feel like it's a big accomplishment? Have you reached any goals with this? Do you even have any chess goals?
So it's a mix of things. I think it was harder to get back to than it was last time. I think players in general, I think players are better. I think what people's perception of what a rating means is a little different than it used to be, in terms of if everyone gets better, it's a statistical model, and it's based around that average is somewhere in the 15 to 1600 range. So if everyone gets better, the average is still going to stay at 15 to 1600.
Yeah. But it just doesn't mean what it used to mean.
Yeah. Players have so much more access to information, and the computers are so much better, than they were. I do think to some extent it was more mental game than it was actually chess that got me the
What do you mean by that?
Got me the rating gains. Being able to kind of separate yourself from caring about, the outcome so much and just focusing on the position and playing and not being, being able to come and not be nervous. And, I know what that feeling is like when you sit down at a tournament board and you've got sweaty palms and a little bit of the jitters, but I don't really feel that way these days. So that's really been really helpful for me, is using some, breathing and mentally calming techniques to just stay focused. And
So do you have like a little pre-game calming ritual that you do in the car, at the board, or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I just like to listen to some music, and I always find a little bit of like some sort of energy drink or caffeine helps too.
Okay.
Just a little bit of like 5 hour energy, not a whole one. A whole one, I'll be wired.
That's funny. My pregame ritual is having my 9-year-old tell me all about her day on the way over in excruciating detail, which, sometimes is very interesting. Sometimes less interesting, depends on the day. They're all interesting to her.
But I also had, I mean, you went back to the amount of time I was spending on chess.
Yeah.
It was a lot of time in the last year. I left my previous company last March, and it, with the intention of starting a business or buying a business of my own. And that took a while. So my days were filled with a little bit of business searching and a lot of time to with my dog or chess.
Nice.
Which was great. To have a year to just spend on chess was awesome.
Yeah, I bet. How much time were you able to spend a day during that? You're like, did you spend like 5 hours a day or something, or like 1 hour a day?
At times it was, yeah, 4 or 5 hours a day. I would just burn up the day.
Okay. And then now are you back down to much closer to like an hour a day?
Yeah, something like that. I still have some time to kill right now. Things are just getting going for my business and waiting on inventory to arrive and things like that. So I've got some time to kill.
Okay. Are you worried that as the time you can commit goes down, that the ratings gains will go down? Or are you actually real that you're like, whatever, I'm just playing to have fun?
Yeah, we'll see where how that goes.
Okay.
I can't worry about that. I mean, right now, yeah, I'm at a personal peak, but I don't think anybody's sitting around judging anybody's rating. I think they were like 20 years ago.
It is interesting how much that part has changed. I agree.
Yeah. I think the mentality that people have around tournaments is so much more positive now.
Yeah. There used to be a guy rated 1600 at the club that was just awful to all of us. There was like a crew of us that were at 1200 as adults. Like, we kind of just started and trying to get better. And he would lord his 1600 over us like he was some sort of god. And we would be like, he is. He's like the second highest rated person in the club. He thumps us every game. He is a chess god. And you're like, coming back 20 years later, I'm like, what? What? How can that person acted like that?
Chess will humble everybody unless you're, you know, Magnus. So,
or that guy.
Yeah. I try not to tie my ego up in it. There's always a bigger shark.
Yeah. All right. My next question is, how have you been able to gain so much ratings at our club that is just has so many underrated middle schoolers who are very good and have gained a lot of rating on the sort of the backs of the adult players? Have you just avoided playing them, or do you have some magic you can share with us to defeat middle schoolers?
I mean, I haven't played too many of them too many times. You know, one of your previous guests, I only played him once and haven't had another game with him. Another, we're 1-1. So another, it's like 1.5 out of 2. It's not like an every week that you have to face that issue.
Okay. So your answer is dodge them. That's what I'm hearing. I feel like I play them twice out of every 5 games. So
yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the math has seemed to work out that way, but I haven't had to play too many games against the kids.
And again, just to be clear, in case any of them hear this, the middle schoolers at our club are wonderful people.
Everyone is.
They're just too good at chess. That's why.
I think we have a great club with a really good culture there.
Yeah.
That's why I keep going.
Yeah. I feel like most, not just chess clubs, but most gatherings in all across have one or two people that you're like, ugh, they're here. But I just don't feel like that at our club. Everyone in our club is great. I'm amazing.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Quite amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you have any goals in chess then? Or is your goal just kind of like, keep having a healthy relationship with chess, keep enjoying it?
That's my main goal. Is I want to have, you know, it's a lifelong thing for me. I want to make sure I keep being able to play and enjoying it and learning new things if I can. But I don't want to put too much pressure about the rating. You never know when that day is going to come where it's not going to go up anymore.
Yeah.
And it, right now it's been pretty good the last few months. Most of the rating gains have actually come since November or October for me. It was pretty stagnant up until then. I was just sort of bouncing around the low 1700s, still trying to sort through my own penchant for moving too quickly and not thinking through positions enough.
Yeah, because I remember when you came back, you were in the low 1700s. And then I kind of jumped pretty deep into the low 1700s and you were pretty consistent. And then I dropped way back and you were just the consistent 1700 guy. And then all of a sudden, I didn't even realize that. I was like, wait, what? How did Adam gain all this rating? This is amazing.
Yeah, I had to find a way to be more patient with myself. I blew a really good win in, I want to say, October. I played almost perfect game. And from the opening all the way through the middle game, picked up a piece and a pawn on a opponent rated 150 points higher than me. And marched it all, everything down to the end, and I had apparently two moves on the board, and I chose to pin the rook rather than play a check, and in like 2 seconds when I had plenty of time on the clock.
Yeah.
And it was stalemate.
Oh, no.
And I learned a I feel like I learned a really good lesson in that game. And it's actually been very, very solid play since then for me.
Interesting.
In terms of just
one of the keys is slowing down. Do you do that like with your breathing during the game? Do you do anything physical, or is it more of a mental thing of like, hey, it's time to pull it back here?
Yeah. And it particularly for me, I have a penchant for blitzing out the opening when I, as long as I'm in something that I know, and I have to remember when I start to get to the point where I need to start taking time and thinking through things, and remembering not to play from memory.
Okay. So you intentionally slow yourself?
Yes. Okay. I have to remember to do that. That is a big part of the thought process for me is,
okay. And so do you have like a thought process you use to do that or to go through your move selection or anything, or you just kind of think and do what comes into your mind?
No, I think it's a little intuitive for me. You know, you just go on somewhat on, you know, what are the principles of the position that's going on? Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I don't have like a checklist of things I'm going through in my brain of because at this point I feel like it's a little bit built in.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one. I no longer use a checklist. I'm just playing and looking for the best moves. And every now and then I blunder and I'm like, you know, it would be great. Some sort of blunder check like that I used to use.
Yeah, and that's why what I would say is that in most of those cases, I don't think that it's because of a lack of knowledge that people blunder. It's a mental mistake.
Yeah.
And because you know the minute you put the piece on that square, oh yeah, I already checked this line.
Right.
I already ruled this move out. Why did I do that?
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem to kick.
Yeah, I agree. How about coaching? Do you do any coaching, or do you have any coaches these days?
I do not have any coach these days, and I have in the past, but not in a long time. I worked for that program that in the elementary schools that I got me started. Years later, Mark hooked me up with the guy who was then running it when I was in my teens. I needed some volunteer work hours. And after I got my hours, they let me actually like get paid to teach chess, which was great.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's fun.
For a few months. Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't work with a coach right now?
No, not at the moment.
Okay. Any temptation to do that? Or are you like, hey, man, what are you talking about? I just gained 170 rating points. I don't need a coach.
No, I mean, if I find a coach I like, I'm just not seeking it out. I always, for me in the past, either I met them through connections or I met coaches at tournaments, and that's how I found my coaches, usually beating their students.
Okay. All right. Well, Adam, I've got great news. I have room for a student. I am willing to take you on. I find it's always good to have your coach be lower rated than you. It's the best way.
Oh, I mean, I knew a lot of people who had coaches that they surpassed and stuck with them.
Oh, really? Okay. That's cool. How about tournaments? Anything big on the horizon? I know you play every week at our club, but any big tournaments you're eyeing?
Not right now of the big ones because the business stuff. I'm actually going to miss the next couple of weeks at the club, unfortunately, which is a little bit of a bummer. It is my favorite night of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife and knows, my students know, everyone knows Wednesday is chess night. Yeah. My students will even say on Wednesday, like, oh, it's chess night. Did you get your pairing yet? They don't know anything about chess. They just know the words chess night and pairing. And then, you know, they're like, is that person a middle schooler that I'm paired against? Those are their big questions. So,
yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I know from being those kids back then that you just don't think about that stuff when you're at the board. You're not worried about your rating or anything else.
Yeah. I guess since we have a former Scholastic player on the podcast, I should ask you, like, what did you think about playing adults? Were you like nervous about it? Did you think of them as like easy targets? Like what was your view on adult chess players?
At first, I think I was definitely nervous about it. But once you beat a few of them, then, you know, that sort of goes away.
Yeah.
And it's just a game.
Okay. Yeah. It's this game anyone can be good at. Yeah. But did you ever transition into like, yes, I'm playing an adult. Oh, look, he looks like he's not any good anymore.
Definitely once if they were lower rated than me, I felt that way.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. And that's the other thing about rating gain is it's a lot of just not losing games that that you shouldn't lose.
Yeah, I hear that.
You don't have to win a lot of games against players higher rated than you. You can draw a lot of those games and just farm.
Yeah, this last week, I got into a game that was basically a draw the whole way. Oh no, sorry, that was 2 weeks ago, and I was able to just like trick my opponent in the end game and win it. And I was like, okay, that's how you have to beat lower rated players. And then this last week, oh my goodness, I know you saw the end. Well, it was a wild one where we like each had pass pawns and rooks behind them. It was madness. Like,
with a minute on the clock, it's really hard. Yeah. I want to say that position was either equal or you probably had an edge.
Yeah, I think I had more room to win. The computer said it was equal, but I think it would have been very hard for my opponent to have found the equalizing moves, because I think they would have gone for the win also.
I would have bet on you in that position to keep on to play on it.
The draw offer was very interesting because it was on my turn when he made it. I was like deep in calculation with only a minute on the clock, and then he's like draw, and I was like, it just like totally yanked me out of my calculation. I was like, what the? And then I was like, oh, I mean, at this point, I kind of feel like I have to take a draw now. Like, I just can't. I don't think I can get back to where I was and have him only a minute.
I don't know what the rule is there, because they're supposed to offer it and then play their move.
Yeah.
And then you have on your turn to think about it.
Right.
But I don't know. I haven't looked at the rule book in a really long time. I just know that once they offer it, they can't pull it back. I had a kid that tried to do that.
That's always funny. Yeah. Yeah, and it's nothing against the person. It's just, it was a very shocking moment for me. Like, I hadn't been thinking about drawing. To me, it was a two-result game. I couldn't imagine a draw in that position. I was trying to figure out you know, one of a couple ways to do it. And then when he offered the draw, it was just like such a thunderbolt that I was like, sure, I guess I'll take that. Like, I can't find a win. I can find possible wins, but I also have not been having a great tournament. So I was like, a loss would be really catastrophic for me. A draw would just be bad.
Yeah, and I had a tournament like that last year where it was the last round of the tournament. Tournament hadn't gone particularly well. It was a fairly equal position. I could have gone for a minor weakness that might have given me something to play for and grind for like 2 or 3 hours. But I took the draw and I felt no guilt about it. I just wanted the tournament to be over at that point.
Yeah. Yep. Those rounds are the ones where, like at a big tournament, where I rarely take draws. Because I know my opponent is like, ugh, I've played bad this tournament. We're both near the bottom board. I just want to go home. And I'm like, this is my chance. You want to go home. And I want to take advantage of this and get a win.
Oh, yeah. I had one of those where I was down in the last round. I had a decent tournament, but I think I was down a queen.
Oh, wow.
But I was still playing. And I got a dirty trick in and got a back rank checkmate.
Oh my goodness. Down the queen, get the back
rank. I just kept feeding him pieces. I fed him like 3 pieces in a row and he kind of stopped paying attention on the third one and forgot that he had a back rank problem.
Oh, that's funny. That is funny. He's probably annoyed even. Like, would this guy just resign already? What is he doing? And then you're like, this is why. This checkmate right here, this is why I didn't resign. Yeah, that's a tough beat for that guy. That's a tough beat. Ah, well, Adam, this has been fascinating so far. Before we head out, do you want to, like, are there any top five books or resources you want to talk about? It sounds like you spend most of your time playing chess, analyzing games, doing puzzles, doing some opening prep. Anything else you want to leave our listeners with today?
Really? I just hope they have fun and continue to, you know, have it as a good part of their lives. And it's been great for me.
Nice. So you would say it's been good for your mental health, like Ali Reza Farooja?
I mean, it's not my career.
yeah, exactly. I mean, he said it was good for his mental health. So, and a lot of people laughed at him, but like you, I feel the same for me. It's very good for my mental health. It's a opportunity to disconnect from all the devices and just go deep into this thing. It's almost like meditation for me.
Yeah, it's my escape from everything else going on. And I love the game. I love following it. It's my favorite kind of sport outside of football.
Nice.
And it can be hard if you're in a bit of a slump. I know it can make you feel, you know, dumb or something at times, but
yeah,
it always comes back around. And you just have to plow through and eventually it's the slump ends. But yeah. I like I said, sometimes it's just you need a break.
Yeah, I know about slumps. Last year was quite the slump for me. This is the thing when no one cares what anyone else's rating is, right? But my rating went down like, I don't know, 150 points or something. And not like a catastrophic tournament, just like 8 months slide where I'm just like, did I just get way worse at chess somehow while studying all the time?
I think you also suffered from really hard pairings a lot.
Okay. Interesting. That's that luck factor that we just can't account for in any way.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think that comes into play. It's just, and then when people are losing, you get into that mindset of, I have to win in order to break it. And you overpress and you just dig your hole deeper.
Yep. That hole was swallowing me up, actually. I was like, is there daylight? I don't know anymore. That was tough.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, the only person who puts any pressure on anybody is themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Even my daughter, who is a tournament chess player, does not care what my rating is. I mean, if it was like 2,700, she would care. She would be impressed. But below that, she's like, meh, whatever, you're my dad. I don't care what your rating is.
I don't think she even cares what her rating is.
Yeah, she does a little, but like she doesn't worry about it. She's just like, I played a tournament. Did my rating go up? And I'm like, yep, by 30 points. And she's like, okay, cool.
That's a great mentality to have.
Yeah. She played a tournament this weekend. Oh, man, she played some really good games. She played a really great first game. It was a Paul Morphy type game. Like, we just quickly looked at it at the end of after she came. She was so proud of it. And like, I saw she could win a rook. And I was like, oh, you didn't take the rook there. And she goes, Dad, it's a mate in two. I get to sack a rook. And I was like, oh, wow. I didn't see that. I wasn't looking to sack rooks in this position. I was looking to grab free rooks. So this is pretty impressive stuff.
That's great. You know, I think it's that they should have it in schools.
Yeah, for sure.
Everywhere. I think all the kids should be learning it at least a little bit. But I mean, there's a good contingent of kids at the club. They seem to be having fun. The 25-minute games are pretty funny to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. None of them run out of time. So it's like the perfect time control for them.
Bang. They.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's some bangers over there for sure.
It's sometimes the positions are just like, how did this happen?
Yeah. In one of her first games there, no, her very first tournament game ever, she checkmated somebody and she was like, checkmate. And they castled out of check. And they had already moved both the rook and the king off of their starting squares, back onto their starting squares, and then castled out of check. And it was an older kid. And so she was like, and I just said, like, how can you let them do that? And she said, I just assumed they knew rules. I didn't know because they were older than me. I was like, oh, no, there are no extra rules. You know them all.
Oh, I missed an illegal move by an opponent in a game last year.
Oh,
in
no.
a tournament in a it was a time scramble.
Okay.
And it was one where it went from winning to lost, and the key was actually the illegal move that I didn't see my opponent play.
Oh no.
And it was as soon as the game was over, I was a little distracted. We had like six people standing around, which I really wish people would step at least like a few feet back in those situations. And if there's anybody listening at this point, yeah, you know, give people breathing room when they're in time scrambles.
Yeah, it's tough.
But as soon as it was over, somebody was like, you missed an illegal move. You could have stopped the clock and gotten X number of minutes put back.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, we're just having fun, right? Right? That's the plan.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
hey, my opponent won. He got away with a fast one, and power to him.
Yeah. Hopefully it was a mistake. We're going to go with it was a mistake.
Oh, it totally was. He didn't realize it either.
Yeah. I feel like that's most of illegal moves. It's just like time scrambles, you make a mistake and it just happens.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Adam, I'm sad to hear that you won't be at the club for the next couple of weeks. Hopefully you'll be able to come back strong. Hopefully you can put a tournament on your radar. I think I might make the National Open in Vegas in June. I thought that was out of the question, but I think I found a way to make it happen.
Oh, that's early June, right?
It's early June.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a crazy time for me, but because I'll just be getting all my machines in, and I have to get them out to clients.
You're building AI super robots, right? That's your company.
No, I have I have a goofy kind of business. We sent event spaces and weddings in particular. We build in and rent scenting equipment, so we have a really big menu of fragrances people can choose from, and we can ship them our professional scenting equipment, and they turn it on, and it'll make the whole place smell like lavender or jasmine or whatever they want for their event or wedding. And yeah, it's we're the first company doing it, so it's an experiment.
Yeah, sounds cool. My classroom could really, really use that, actually. My students constantly complain that it smells horrible. So I don't know. Maybe I'll be hitting you up.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing all types of spaces and stuff. It's fun. And so can I plug it?
Well, Adam, thanks so much for coming on. If anyone needs a sense for their upcoming event, Adam's your guy. If you want to check in with Adam about his process, what he's been up to, maybe you can get some advice on how to slow down your play through breathing and thoughtfulness. Where can people reach you, Adam?
Honestly, I don't really have any social media.
Nice. Okay. I like it.
Yeah. There's not really a good place, and I kind of keep my chess profiles private. So.
Whoa. Okay. We got secret prep here happening too. Wow.
I use what I'm playing on there. So.
All right. Well, if you want to reach Adam, just attach your message to a carrier pigeon.
Email Kevin and have him forward it.
All right. That works too. Fine. We'll go that route. All right, Adam. Well, thanks so much for coming on today. And for those of you out there, I hope this is the period where you gain 170 rating points in like 3 or 4 months. And if not, it's okay. It doesn't happen all like that all the time. We'll have another guest next week that will help you through your journey. And I'll see y'all next time, everybody. Goodbye.